Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast. Joining me as co-host, Stephen Kerr, 65 plus years in sports journalism between the two of us. Glad to have you guys aboard. And later in the show, we're going to talk about the Framber Valdez injury, the Astros week, and some incredible news for Cougar basketball. But Stephen, since the Texans made the Stephon Diggs trade, I had on Cody Stutes, but you and I haven't had a chance to react. What was your reaction when you heard about it?
Yeah, and that was a great show, by the way. Cody is something else. He definitely knows his stuff, and he made some great points. And, you know, pretty much along the same line, I was happy with the trade, especially when the Texans voided the last 3 years of Stephon's contract. Because, as we know, you know, Stephon has kind of worn out his welcome everywhere he's been. The thing is, if it's going to incentivize him to have a really good year, well, that's great for the Texans because they need a lead wide receiver to have a great year like that, along with Nico Collins, along with Tank Dell, provided that he can come back from his injury. So all in all, I liked the trade. I didn't, you know, see anything wrong with it, especially the Texans didn't give up that much for him. They did void the last 3 years of his contract. I would have been a little more concerned if that contract had remained in place, you know, especially considering what we just talked about, you know, some personal things about Diggs that may or may not upset the Texans locker room. But I still think, Robert, and I know Cody alluded to this too, and I agree. I do think they need to still draft a wide receiver, maybe not in the first couple of picks, but somebody in the middle rounds that they can bring along. They don't have to throw in the lineup right away because A, you don't know if Stephon Diggs is going to be around for more than a year. B, you don't know who's going to get injured or if Tank is going to be able to come back well from his injury. C, Robert Woods, you don't know how long he's going to be sticking. He may be gone by the time training camp's over. So there are a number of reasons that the Texans should still address the wide receiver position in the draft. It's just, it's not going to be as much of a top priority as it might have been before the Stephon Diggs trade.
You mentioned all those factors, but how about another one? Nico is not on paper beyond this year either yet.
Well, that's right. And, you know, that's going to be something to look at because, well, you know, there's no guarantee he's going to have another great year next year. So if he, you know, if he falls off a bit, then the question becomes, well, do you take a chance and sign him long term or do you not? So, yeah, that is another factor in the mix that you should still get somebody that can make an impact for you, but you don't have to throw him in, you know, this year.
All right. With all that going on, and you mentioned the voided contract, but low key, Nick Caserio actually did a little trick with Diggs' contract. It's a big deal. As I'm sure everyone heard, Stephen alluded to, he's only signed for this year, but on the books, Caserio spread it out to only $4 million this year and $4 million each of the 3 years after this one. So Stephen, what he did is make more space for this year, meaning there's $23.5 million in cap space still available. Plenty of room to add more pieces. And this is a little Daryl Morey cap gymnastics, Stephen. Very impressive.
I tell you what, I admire these guys who know how to work the salary cap. I don't know about you, Robert, but math, statistics, not my strong suit. Not at all. I mean, even sports statistics can trip me up, especially the real advanced ones I have to think about. So that is pretty remarkable. And yeah, it puts the Texans in a position to add more pieces, but also puts them in a better position with the draft in case, you know, who knows what other trades Caserio's got up his sleeve. We know that he's always bound to do something in the draft. So it definitely helps the Texans in a number of ways moving forward, the way he was able to do that. And yeah, again, he's got a gift of persuasion that very few people have, apparently, to be able to pull off this kind of thing.
As we sit here Tuesday afternoon, cornerback Stephon Gilmore and safety Justin Simmons are still available in the secondary. So those are options. But Caserio could be waiting for maybe using that money with some significant roster cuts that usually happen post-NFL draft, Stephen. And what if a bigger name or two is released in May or June? Or Caserio might also use that money on big name late training camp cuts too.
Well, that's why, you know, I know people get upset sometimes after the first day or two of the quote unquote big free agents are off the board and you don't have a chance. Look, you also have to understand you've got the draft and you have those cuts that you're talking about, you know, not just at the end of training camp, but, you know, in the next month or so, there's going to be some that you could conceivably pick up, especially, you know, in some of the Texans that needs that they still need to fill, like defensive tackle, for instance. Maybe another offensive lineman will become available at the right spot. Another wide receiver. I mean, you don't know. So that's why this move by Caserio is significant as well, because it could open up something not just in the draft, but one of these other cuts that other teams may be making between now and the end of training camp.
Even if they don't want to cut somebody in May or June, maybe they think, well, I don't know if we want to keep this guy around, but I don't want to get nothing for him. Don't forget, Caserio also picked up a fifth and a sixth round draft choice for Diggs that he could use. You know, and you think that's nothing, but that's sometimes just all they want for some veteran that they would have released and got nothing for. So that's another option that they've got.
Well, that's right. And you never know who some of these mid-round picks will turn into. I mean, really, you could go on and on and on, not just with the Texans, but in the NFL. You never know when one of these is going to pan out. And the deal that got made to bring that there makes Caserio and other GMs like him look like a genius.
And also, Stephen, did you see C.J. Stroud is already working out in California with Stephon Diggs and John Metchie? He's trying to build that chemistry so Diggs might re-sign on a discount, like one of those Walmart discount deals next year.
Well, and that's not surprising because if I remember correctly, you know, after the Texans drafted C.J. and he was signed, that, you know, he got a group of the receivers to work out before the season started. So that doesn't surprise me at all. And I think that's one of the reasons, you know, hopefully Stephon Diggs will be happier. Because C.J. Stroud definitely makes sure he takes care of his wide receivers, his offensive linemen, his running backs. You know, he's the kind of guy that you want to hang around. So that's good to see, but it doesn't surprise me in the least because he's done that in the past.
I mean, I can't imagine, and I don't know if you can, Stephon Diggs getting some major deal now that he's in his 30s. He's a diva. Nobody's going to sign him long. So it's going to be a short-term deal next. And it's just all that's going to matter is, I think, is like, unless somebody blows him away, it's where Diggs wants to play.
Well, you never know, though, if he has a banner year. I mean, if his numbers have dropped off somewhat, but gosh, he still caught, what, 1,100 yards for 8 touchdown passes last season, you know, a little bit under what his previous numbers have been. But hey, if you're the Texans, you'll definitely take that. But what if he surpasses that? What if he has a really good year? Somebody could come along. But, you know, it's still good for the Texans. You know, if he is happy there and they're happy with him, you know, maybe they'll throw some bigger money at him. Maybe not the kind that you throw a 26 or 27-year-old, but certainly reasonably enough to keep him after next year.
Man, Steven, it just feels like I've walked into one of those Star Trek parallel universes with just Texans good news after Texans good news after Texans good news, you know, these past few months.
Well, don't you think the law of averages, it's about time, isn't it? I mean, the law of averages had to catch up sometime because we went through the last several years, it seemed like 10 years, but I guess it was only, what, 3-4 of nothing but bad Texans news after bad Texans news. So, hey, it's time for it to come around. And you just hope that all of this does lead to the Texans continuing where they left off from last year, that you don't have another downer year. And I've got a feeling in my gut, Robert, that it's not going to happen. I just think this team is on an upward trajectory. Look, if the Astros can run off 7 straight ALCS appearances, hey, the Texans can start moving upward and get into deeper into the playoffs and maybe even finally make an AFC championship game for the first time in their history.
Man, if anybody's wondering, you know, why I wear these hats all the time is because those 3 or 4 years that Steven said, only 3 or 4 years, I think I lost all my hair during those 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. And, you know, with you doing the show, Robert, you wear a number of different hats anyway. So that's pretty appropriate.
Yeah, exactly. Let's move to the Astros. And Monday night, the bullpen finally came to the rescue. Blair Henley, not the best debut. And he was thrown into the fire after Fromber was pulled with elbow soreness. Before we get to Fromber, Steven, how do you feel about Henley and his career 4.47 minor league ERA being tossed into the fire against the Rangers, you know, a division rival, a big game you would think early in the year. Was that the only option? Dana Brown and Espot are under the white hot spotlight right now. I don't know.
I think he was the only option, Robert, in only that he was the only one that was available to pitch that day. I think, you know, that it was going to be his turn to pitch anyway. You know, Sean Dubin, he's just coming back from surgery. He's only pitched an inning.
You're could not you have done a bullpen day, maybe?
I mean, I was thinking you could start Brandon Belak and maybe piggyback him with Seth Martinez, but you'd probably, I guess, as it turned out, you could have, because Henley didn't even make it out of the first inning. So, you know, in hindsight, it probably wouldn't have mattered if you had done, you know, an opener type situation, put Belak in there and maybe follow him with Martinez or something. You know, now it looks pretty poor that they did that. But I think, you know, at the time they were thinking, gosh, we used the bullpen enough already. Let's see if we can get some innings out of this guy and maybe he'll show us something. But yeah, it was a long shot, Robert, because look, and he is a former Longhorn, by the way, so I'm not ragging on him, but he pitched every, you know, all of last year in Corpus Christi. And I think he only had one start this early in the season this year with Sugarland. So he really just didn't hardly have any AAA experience, much less major league experience to come out. You know, sometimes you strike gold with that sort of thing and sometimes you don't, but it was almost as if Henley was set up to fail just because of the situation he was put in.
Yeah, not sure Belak would have been the best option either. He's got like an 8-1 ERA, 3.75 batting average again so far this year. And Steven, I can't remember, did he pitch on Sunday?
I think he pitched on Monday. I think he did come in, you know, after Martinez did. So, you know, it could have been, I don't know that I'd start Belak. I'm not comfortable with him as a starter. Him coming out of the bullpen, he still hasn't done that well, but, you know, it's a crapshoot. You either go with him or you go with Henley, because you just don't have anybody in your AAA club that could do it. I think Spencer Arrighetti, it would have been too soon for him to come up because he might have been the likely choice.
Yeah, 3 days rest, and he hasn't even had really all that much success so far. I think he'd given up 7 runs in 8 innings.
Right. So you're just, I mean, this is why, Robert, you know, these injuries are so disturbing, because you've got the bare bones of this, and, you know, the farm system, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, but the farm system with the Astros, I mean, it's killing them right now just because of specifically all the pitching injuries. You don't have the kind of depth that you can go into. There's only so far you can go, and you even have some guys in your minor league system that are injured. So yeah, it just was, they were caught between a rock and a hard place, I think.
Yeah, it's tough when you go into a season and you've got 8 starters or 9 starters and they're all injured. I mean, you had a bunch of major league starters definitely on this team signed to contracts, and they're, you know, with everybody injured, it's just, you know, with Garcia out and Verlander out and Lance McCullers out and blah, 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 on and on and on and on. So yeah, that's tough. And I mean, you still, with all that going on, Blanco still giving you, you know, one of the great starts in MLB history. I think they said he got out the most guys to start a season, Steven, in the modern era since they, I don't know, like 1893.
Early, I think in 1901, I think there was a pitcher who did. But yeah, in the late 1800s. Yeah, I think it was 50 batters, I believe. The first 50 batters he retired this season on outs before they finally got a hit in the 6th inning. And
yeah, he gave up a walk, right?
He gave up 2 walks in the no-hitter, both to Springer. And then he gave up one in the game that he pitched on Sunday night. So yeah, but as far as outs are concerned, he got the first 50 outs, I think, before somebody got a hit. So, you know, the biggest concern I had, usually when a pitcher comes off a no-hitter, they don't do quite as well the next time out. Now, the fact that he even flirted with a second no-hitter is amazing in and of itself, because as we know, the only player who's done that has only happened once, and it was in the 1930s with Johnny Vandermeer. So the likelihood of that happening just was almost slim to none, but he came so close, and thank goodness, you know, the bullpen, it almost caved in, but they preserved it, because that would have been a shame if the Astros had blown that game and that performance by Blanco for a second time.
Yeah, I remember when Mike Scott threw the no-hitter to clinch the division against the Giants, his next start. I remember he went into like the 7th, I think, before he gave up a hit in that.
Yeah, he came close. Yeah, so that's right. Mike Scott almost did the same thing. So, you know, I mean, the Astros and no-hitters, they seem to be synonymous with each other the last few years, Robert, because, you know, we've had some in some playoff games. But what fascinates me about it, it's not always the great pitchers who can do it. I mean, Ronel Blanco, he hardly had any major league seasoning for starts either. He only had a handful coming into this season, and you weren't even sure how he was going to do being put in that number 5 spot. So here he goes in his first start. He comes out and pitches a no-hitter. I mean, gosh, who would have expected that? But this seems to happen time and time again in baseball. And, you know, before this whole Fromber situation came up, I was going to ask you, well, who are you going to take out of the rotation when Justin Verlander comes back? And if Blanco continues to pitch the way he does by that point, well, it's probably a moot point now, but it certainly would have been fascinating to talk about.
Yeah, you just hit on a sore spot for me, because one of my big pet peeves I have for Astros conversation is don't discuss who's getting dropped from the starting pitching rotation until we're sure more than 5 guys are healthy. If there's one lesson we should have learned, starting pitching injuries are just nonstop. Plus, there's now the 6-man rotation, which, you know, I'd implement every chance I could as long as you have 6 solid starters.
Well, yeah, and especially with, you know, the month of April is brutal, not just for the quality of schedule that the Astros have had, but 20 games in 21 days. I mean, you've got to have that rotation. And even after that, you could still have a 6-man rotation, just rest some guys. So it's good to have it when you can have it. But man, the way these injuries are piling up, it's going to be tough just to do that throughout the year.
All right, let's go back to Fromber, because Fromber had a rough second half of last season, as we all remember. And now there's the elbow soreness. He's 30 years old. Steven, this is why it's so dangerous for a pitcher's agent to play hardball when he's offered that early contract extension. Remember that when Dana Brown was working on an extension, Fromber was at his peak. I'm sure Javier is really glad right now that he signed that extension.
Yeah, you know it. I mean, pitching is, it is just such a fickle thing, Robert. You know, you can sign these guys to, you know, multi-year hundreds of million dollars. I mean, we could even say that about Josh Taylor. I mean, he's been relatively healthy for the most part over the years, but you know, who's to say? He could go down tomorrow. I mean, you don't know anymore. So the fact that Fromber has got some questionable things going with the elbow soreness, it makes you pause and go, well, do we want to do that with this guy? Especially with, you know, the year that he had last year, it certainly wasn't like what he had the year before. And he's been okay. I mean, his first start wasn't terrible, but he walked to way too many guys. His second start was much better. The only reason they lost is the Astros bullpen blew the lead. So there's just a lot of uncertainty with Fromber right now. And I think it's too early to even think about wanting to try to sign him long-term right now.
You ready to talk some Astros offense?
Yeah, why not? You know, the one thing we can say is they did bail out the poor performance by Hindley on Monday night. But boy, to start the season, Robert, there are definitely some question marks.
Well, not really. See, my thing is, the only truly disappointing thing about the offense so far is their struggles with runners in scoring position. As we talked Tuesday afternoon, six of the starters and Caratini have a better than 800 OPS. But Steven, let's go to the bad stuff. Who's your most disappointing Astros hitter so far? It shouldn't be like that hard.
No, it's not that hard. Well, now we could put Jose Abreu in the conversation, but I think that's obvious because we've talked about him over and over again. So
well, yeah, he's my number one.
I'm not going to use him. I'm going to talk about Alex Bregman for a moment, Robert. Look, it's not just this season that I'm talking about. Alex Bregman hasn't put a really good season together from start to finish since that MVP year. What was it, 2019, I believe? That's what, yeah. five years ago. Now, I know he's had some injuries in the past and that sort of thing, but that does play into it. And so if we're sitting here talking about, oh, we should re-sign Bregman to a, you know, another huge contract and extend it, you know, look, I understand that, you know, third baseman like him from the defensive side are at a premium. You know, it's very hard to find a really good third baseman. But when it comes to hitting, look, Alex Bregman is not giving me what I think a third baseman should be giving. You know, hitting in the 260s the last couple of years, that's not going to cut it for a third baseman. And how about some more power? I need more power from the third base side. I need more power from Bregman. And we've heard so much talk this offseason how it's the healthiest offseason he's ever had. He hadn't had all the injuries to go through, that he's had a full offseason of training, and he's been doing, you know, weighted bats and doing all kinds of things to get his body in shape. Well, that's all well and good, but he has not shown me in several years that he's worth that kind of contract if we're going to talk about discussing it.
Yeah, the one thing that he does do, though, is he typically shows up in October, and he brings that leadership that you want in the clubhouse, especially down the stretch of a season. I just feel like there's an it factor. There's something about him that's really hard to quantify over the years. And, you know, there's only a couple guys that you go through these last seven seasons and they're a common denominator, and Bregman and Altuve are really those guys, right?
They are. And I don't disagree with you, but when it comes to the kind of contract that, you know, Scott Boras is going to be asking for, I just don't know that I'm ready to put him on the same plane as an Altuve. And, you know, Altuve's had his struggles in years past, but look, he's gotten off to a great start this year too. So it's just a very delicate balance you're walking with Alex Bregman. And I need to see, you know, and this is a big year for him. If he wants that contract, he's got to put out, or there'll be a lot of other teams that are going to be hesitant and kind of shying away from offering him, you know, several hundred million dollars over 10 years or what have you. But no, I agree. The Astros offense as a whole, you know, has certainly, they're still among some of the top categories, like in home runs and other things, but it is the runners on base. And, you know, this has been a problem over the years, Robert. They had the same problem last year. And that's the sort of thing that's going to bite you when you get later into the season and get into the playoffs. But there have been some guys that certainly have come through. You know, Yordan, he got off to a slow start, but now he's found his groove. Altuve's doing great. Tucker, he's kind of been hit and miss. You know, Jeremy Pena's been hitting much, much better. Yainer Diaz, he started off hot. He's kind of cooled off a little bit, but I still think we're going to see some good things out of him. So the offense isn't a total bust. It's just there are some holes, though, that definitely need to be filled, especially if you're going to have some shaky pitching with the bullpen and your starters being ineffective or injured.
Yeah, well, it's not really an offensive issue, except I just keep coming back to it. It's you got to get the hits with guys on base. And the Astros do this thing where they'll score 10 runs one night and then they can't get any. It's like they're like 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position the next night. And that seems to have been a problem the last two or three years where we remember the teams like in 17, maybe even in 19, they were clutch hitters, especially that 17 team. That was the clutch of the clutchest and, you know, trash cans, whatever. I mean, they were doing it on the road. So I just feel like that team was maybe the most clutch Astros team of all time, the 17 team. And I do want to speak, though, to the Jose Abreu situation. If it's another April and May disaster, Dana Brown needs to find a real first baseman well before the trade deadline, not in late July. And you just got to release Jose Abreu. It's not just that he's a poor hitter at a hitting position, but he's not exactly a wizard with his glove either. There's only one error. But Steven, there have been some tough scoops and other plays that just good fielding first basemen make.
Yeah, that and the fact that, I mean, he just seems to be constantly late on fastballs. I mean, the other night he swung at a pitch. It was a fastball. It was only 91 miles an hour. Now, you know, for you and me, that's near impossible to hit. But a guy like Abreu, I mean, it's just obvious that his swing is just not what it used to be. It's not been there. And then the defensive things that you just talked about. You know, the problem is, Robert, before the trade deadline, I mean, you could possibly, the only way you could do it is to make a deal. I mean, who are you going to pick up on the bargain bin that's probably going to do any better? But it kind of makes you wonder, you know, the Astros have put themselves in a position where they would go over that luxury tax threshold at the end of the season. So it kind of makes you wonder, can they find a way to dump this contract to at least lower that ceiling a bit, but more importantly, to get more production out of your first baseman? Because, you know, the biggest problem they had is they just don't have any depth at that position, even in the minor leagues or on the club. I mean, you got some guys you can put in there every once in a while for a day off, but you're not going to put Victor Caratini at first base permanently. You're not going to put Yiner Diaz there permanently. You're not even going to put somebody like Gray Kessinger there permanently. So that's the biggest problem you have. And it almost makes me wonder, would they have been better served in the offseason maybe going for some first base help, at least to get you some better backup help than a John Singleton, you know, a Gray Kessinger or whomever? Maybe, you know, I mean, signing Josh Hader is great, but did you really need to do that?
Yeah, my question so far with Dana Brown is, what's he doing at the margins? And I'm not seeing what I like so far. The GMs that went at the margins, Steven, those are the guys that usually win the championship.
Well, that's right. I was just going to say, those margins are very important. I mean, you've talked about it before. Look at the moves that James Click made, albeit in his brief time here, but the moves that he made in the bullpen were pretty much spot on. And Dana Brown has yet to prove, and it's still early in the season, so I'm certainly not giving up on Josh Hader and Ryan Pressly and Brian Abreu, but, you know, there does have to be some discussion about that, though.
Yeah, you can't just depend on those three guys to carry your bullpen. You know, that's the thing about baseball. These bullpens, you got to use them all the time. He knew going into the season that there was a lot of injury issues and a lot of stuff that you were worried about with the staff. And, you know, just look at James Click. You know, the Mauricio Dubon trade. Everybody forgets. James Click does that trade, and boy, did that one pay dividends. It's still paying dividends. Look, the guy that's doing maybe the best right now, you know, the game-saving pitching on Monday night, Seth Martinez in the bullpen. Seth Martinez was a Rule 5 pickup by Jeff Lanois. It was one of the last moves that he made, Stephen, before he had to resign. But that was like December of 2020, and then that was it. A couple of months later, he had to step down. But, you know, that to me, that's the kind of stuff that I need to start seeing from Dana. I'm glad he identified Ronel Blanco could be a starter. That's good, but that's more of like, okay, it's something that he spotted, and maybe, you know, I don't know who was helping him spot that. It might not have just been Dana Brown, but that's the type of stuff that, you know, he's got to get better at. I need to see him start doing, or I'm going to go, okay, Dana Brown needs to go.
Yeah. And I'm sure you won't be alone. And you know, of course you have, I still got to give him a little bit of time because it is only his second year, but you know, and some of these moves do take time to pay off. You know, Seth Martinez, he wasn't an instant success. It's taken him a while to develop. And you know, some of the other moves that Click made and Luno and so forth, you know, they don't all come in right away, but at some point you need to start seeing something out of them. And you know, with Abreu, I mean, you've had more than enough of a sample size to go, this guy has obviously not been a good pickup. You had a full season last year. Okay, he showed some flashes late, and he did pretty good in the postseason. But Robert, you know, the thing is, you can't have everybody on your team, minus the obvious ones who are just great all year long. You can't have too many people who just show up, you know, do the Robert Horry thing where you just show up in the postseason. You got to get there. Yeah. And you need more and more guys to get there through the season. And guys like Jose Abreu, they're not going to get you there. Once you're there, maybe they can help you, but you still got to get there.
All right, let's close with some great news, really great news that we've heard in the last 24 hours for our Cougs fans out there. Juwan Roberts and LJ Cryer both using their extra year of eligibility and coming back next year. Steven, the NIL and COVID helping the Cougs in this perfect storm, getting those two guys back.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, Roberts, he just had surgery on his knee, you know, that's been bothering him for the last several weeks. He should be good to go in 4 to 6 weeks. So, you know, to have him back by the time the season starts at full strength, that is great to see. And LJ Cryer, I mean, I had a feeling that he was going to come back. I need to see more from LJ Cryer. I need to see more consistency. And I think him having an opportunity to come back next season will give him that. So, yeah, great news for the Cougs. You know, for those two players coming back, that's definitely going to help in the experience factor because you're going to have a lot of new guys coming in. And, yeah, they may be highly touted. And Kelvin Sampson does have a knack of putting guys, you know, the first-year guys, whether they be freshmen or transfers, in the spots where they can thrive. But, you know, the point guard position, of course, is going to be the biggest question. How are you going to replace Jamal Shedd? And that's going to be something we're going to have to keep an eye on. But, man, those two guys coming back is definitely going to help.
Yeah, and you might think, well, Shedd's got an extra year. Maybe he's going to come back now. But Cryer intimated in his, like, an interview just within the last few hours that he'll be taking a lot of Shedd's responsibilities at this point. It sounds like he knows Shedd's not coming back. And I think Sampson sort of intimated the same thing.
Sampson knows. I think they do know. And yeah, as great as it would be to have Jamal Shedd back, I just have a feeling it's not going to happen. So the fact that LJ Cryer is coming back, if he can take on some more of those responsibilities, if he can shoot more consistently the way we've heard he can, that's going to be just all the better for the Cougs going forward.
Yeah, Juwan Roberts, by the way, I think he's up to like 136 games as a Cougar already.
That's amazing.
I assume that's going to be the record when, you know, if he plays all next year, when it's all said and done. I mean, I know Fabian played, you know, a lot with the Cougars an extra year, but I think he missed some injury time.
He did. He was out. He was out with an injury for most of the year, a couple of years ago, I think it was. So yeah, Roberts would certainly, he'd have to be the guy if he plays all of next season.
I don't know if you're paying much attention to the NCAA tournament, Stephen, but I think the Cougars were the only team that could have legitimately given UConn, if they had Tugler and Shedd, they could have given UConn a run for its money, because I just knew like three or four games into the tournament, I'm like, and nobody's to touch it. U of H is the only team that could have really given them the business.
Yeah, I would agree. And I kept hoping for a UH-UConn matchup because I just felt that the bracket that they were in, I think, set them up to succeed. And, you know, we can talk about Purdue, and they, you know, they certainly bounced back from when they got bounced out. They were the ones that got bounced out in the first round last year, and they come back and make it to the final. But I, you know, UConn was just going to be too strong, and we knew that. But you know, when the Cougars, when the depth just kind of fell apart with all those injuries, you knew it probably wasn't going to happen, even if they got to that point.
Yeah, they needed Tugler bad.
Oh, Tugler would have. Yeah, and the fact, and let's not forget him coming back next year too. That's definitely going to be a bonus if he can bounce back from that injury.
Yeah, because UConn's got those bigs, and I mean, not just Klingman. There's another guy they got, and. Yeah, it was, and let me just say, I mean, I had way more fun watching Iowa and Caitlin Clark in the tournament
than
anything beyond the Cougars in the NCAA tournament. I mean, it was a joy to watch. I was a little disappointed. She sort of laid an egg in that last game. I think she was like 10 for 28. She had several turnovers. Wasn't one of her best games for sure. And, you know, all credit to South Carolina. Obviously, that's a juggernaut, undefeated. But, boy, they were fun to watch. And it wasn't just Caitlin. I mean, I became a fan of Kate Martin and Gabby Marshall. I mean, they had a great senior, one of the better senior classes, and great story. And you felt like, oh, they're the underdog. Even as good as Caitlin Clark is, they look smaller. They don't look quite as athletic as a lot of these teams that you're used to seeing in the Final Four on the women's side.
You know, it is so, you can remember a time not so long ago, Robert, that women's sports, you know, they were always getting the short end of the stick, especially in coverage and acceptance and TV ratings, and man, you know, how time flies and how far they have come. I mean, just think about it. You know, players like Caitlin Clark, especially over the last couple of years, have done a lot for that. And even though she's leaving, you know, some of those names you just mentioned, but let's not forget, let's throw in Juju Watkins from USC. I mean, she's going to be another big name to keep an eye on next year. And several others that are going to be coming in that are going to continue to propel women's sports forward. And you're right. I think, you know, a lot of people enjoyed watching the women's Final Four in the championship than they did the men. And who would have said that a number of years ago?
Yeah, we just got finished talking about college basketball, men's. We got finished talking about the University of Houston. We haven't talked about the Rockets. Tomorrow, we're going to have a special tribute to Hakeem Olajuwon. So you're going to want to watch and listen to that one for all of you fans out there of the show and fans of the Rockets. So check that one out. But that's all we got for this one. We'll talk some more Astros and hopefully some, maybe more good stuff from the Texans. You never know next week, but great to catch up with you, Steven. Let's do it again.
That sounds good to me.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.